My name is Leonidas, and this is Informed Dissent. What is up, guys? Welcome to episode 38 of Informed Dissent, the podcast where we push back against the culture of groupthink and challenge the narrative. Hope you're doing well. So, this past week, I found out that I'm no longer a POC, guys. This is now a thing of the past, apparently. I am no longer a person of color. I am now an Elena, according to my alma mater, Ohio University. Elena, spelled A-L-A-A-N-A, or Alana, I don't know. Alana stands for African-American / African / Black, Latina / Latinx, no Latino, by the way, Asian-American / Asian, Arab / Middle Eastern, Native American, and all multicultural folks. So, essentially, everyone except for white people, who apparently do not qualify as multicultural. Alana means family, and family means no one gets left behind or forgotten, except white people. Oh, man. Yeah, they just continue to try to out-stupid themselves. Anyway, moving on. This week, we're talking about the train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, and the literal fallout from that as residents are being told everything is fine. But many people who live there say it is not fine at all. And we'll also talk about the Michigan State shooting and the subsequent calls for gun control, as is typical in these situations, and tie in a little bit about what Thomas Sowell has called the vision of the anointed, which I just finished reading again, and you should go read that book because it's fantastic. Our site concept of the week will be availability heuristic and how it fools our brains, which turns out it's really easy to fool our brains. There's a massive list of cognitive biases. It's crazy. And finally, we'll take a break from politics for our This Is Sparta segment, and we'll talk about my favorite musician, NF, who just released a new song called Hope, which is also the name of his new album, which comes out in April, I believe. But, all right, let's get into it. Narrative number one. Everything is fine in East Palestine. I haven't talked about this much because it wasn't exactly clear what was happening. There was a lot of weird things going on. And actually, I was supposed to have a segment on News Nation with Leland Vittert to talk about my book, but it got cut short because one of the News Nation reporters, Evan Lambert, got arrested for trying to report on this disaster during the Mike DeWine, the Ohio governor's news conference. So already you have suspicious behavior going on from the get-go. But anyway, I'm sure you're aware at this point that there was a massive disaster in East Palestine, Ohio, where a train derailed and spilled toxic chemicals, vinyl chloride, apparently. Which, I mean, images out of there looked like a scene from a post-apocalyptic movie. And I guess there actually is a movie on Netflix about a train derailing in a small town in Ohio and spilling toxic chemicals all over the place, which is more than a little weird. But anyway, it looks like no one was hurt directly in the real incident that I've seen, thankfully. But the air and water were contaminated and residents had to evacuate, and it was a huge problem. Continues to be a huge problem. And now residents are reporting that they're experiencing things like burning eyes and throats from the chemicals in the air. There are videos of people stirring up creek water and a rainbow-colored film appears on the surface, suggesting that chemicals are still in the water. And there have been all kinds of fish and other animals dying, I guess, and people saying that their pets are getting sick and vomiting, and some of them are even dying. And people saying that they've been coughing up blood. I mean, it's crazy. You know, listen to this tweet from Daniel Horowitz. He says, texting with an East Palestine resident whose daughter is going to the ER for the third time. I'm seeing a lot of noise about legislation of rail safety. This has nothing to do with the urgent issue at hand. It's a matter of chemical exposure, and these people need to be evacuated. It's wild. Absolutely crazy. And yet, state officials are telling them that everything is fine. They're saying that the water is drinkable. The air quality is perfectly okay. There's nothing to see here, folks. Why are you upset? Don't ask questions. The railroad company, Norfolk Southern, has been largely MIA. And I think the CEO finally made an appearance the other day. But they aren't really saying anything. And to top it off, the federal government initially just shrugged its shoulders and said, oh, good luck. We're not sending you any aid. FEMA just said, sorry, but nah. Pete Buttigieg went out to the media to scold people for paying too much attention to the case. Too much attention. Why are we even paying attention? This stuff happens all the time, guys. What's the problem? It's not news. Hey, here he is talking about it.
Horrible situation has gotten a particularly high amount of attention. There are roughly 1,000 cases a year of a train derailing.
You've got to be kidding me. Here he is talking about the construction.
To work with your contractors, to work with your community colleges on building a workforce that reflects the community. Sure. We have heard way too many stories from generations past of infrastructure where you got a neighborhood, often a neighborhood of color, that finally sees the project come to them, but everyone in the hard hats on that project looking like, doing the good paying jobs, don't look like they came from anywhere near the neighborhood.
Right.
Hey, this dude is the worst. It also shows you just how destructive wokeism is, right? I mean, it focuses on idiotic nonsense instead of paying attention to actual problems. There's that joke that a woke person would be more concerned about making sure someone uses the correct gender pronouns for a patient instead of saving their life. Priorities are all screwed up. It's not even a joke anymore. This is real life. This is real life. It's a mind virus. More concerned about white people in construction. And the administration's more concerned about having a gay dude in the administration so we can fly rainbows and feel like we've accomplished something than caring about his ability to competently operate the Department of Transportation. This is where we are. It's nonsense. But this whole thing's really weird, right? I mean, where is everyone? Where are the activists? Where are the celebrities? Where are the profile pictures? I stand with East Palestine. Where's Greta? Yeah, maybe the people of East Palestine should identify as Ukrainians and they'll get some real attention. I don't know. Biden went and visited Kiev, but hasn't visited East Palestine. Send all kinds of aid to Ukraine, not to East Palestine. This is the kind of stuff that creates conspiracy theories, though, right? And if you can't trust what you're being told by the people who are in charge, you're going to assume that they're trying to cover something up, that they're trying to conspire against you. And it makes sense. I mean, if people are being evasive and deceptive, you're going to assume that they're up to something. And most of the time, they are. The people in that town are seeing a stark contradiction between what they're being told and what they're actually seeing in their town and in their own lives. If you can smell a chemical odor in the air and it makes your eyes burn and makes your dog start vomiting for no reason, and you have to take your kid to the emergency room because it's making her sick, you're going to have some questions, I think. Maybe a few. So it's understandably frustrating when no one gives you any answers or they just try to assure you that everything is fine. It's that meme with the dog sitting and sipping coffee while the entire room around him is on fire. Stop the gaslighting. Everything is not fine. But it does appear that this weekend FEMA did change their minds and decided to go ahead and send some aid after all, after initially saying, nah, no thanks. I'm not sure what prompted the change of heart, but some people are speculating that it's politically motivated since Trump announced that he would visit the town and FEMA changed their mind shortly thereafter. Again, you can't say for sure, but it's suspicious behavior, so you have to wonder. But why would anyone even trust the government at this point, especially after COVID? The EPA says it's safe. Oh, cool. EPA also told people it was safe after 9/11. Then a bunch of people ended up with cancer and a bunch of other health issues. Trust the EPA, though, right? John Stewart was talking about this on his podcast. Here he is. Listen to him.
Just in the experience from 9/11, the EPA issued a statement probably not 3 days afterwards saying all clear. And the students came back and Wall Street came back and everybody came back and cars and things were still caked with dust and those toxins, you know, and again, a slightly different environment, but those toxins then found their way into, I mean, people ate there, slept there, cried there, went to the bathroom there, like into everybody's system. So I really urge the authorities to act with caution and protectiveness for the people there, especially the children there. Julia, what in your reporting, does this smell of a cover up to you, or does it smell of lethargy or apathy? What has caused this sort of strange delay in responsiveness from the national media and from where's the urgency?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, one point to be made is that train derailments and trains carrying crude oil and hazardous chemicals happen all the time, which should not be taken, you know, as.
Yeah, there were two more yesterday. There were just it's a thing. And so this was just business as usual.
Jeez, man. That's what Buttigieg said, too. You know, he said these things happen all the time. Really? Well, it's fine then. No worries. Goodness. So what needs to be done about it? I guess that's the main question. And, you know, I'm kind of torn about the whole thing because I don't trust the government at all. And I know that's a huge surprise to those of you who follow me. But, you know, this whole idea that we need to depend on FEMA and the DOT and President Biden and Buttigieg to take care of us and protect us from the evil railroad companies is just, it's a little ridiculous to me. I criticize the government for its hypocrisy in regards to this case, but ultimately, private enterprise needs to be private enterprise, and that includes railroads. Government engaging in hyper-regulation, or honestly, pretty much any regulation, does not make things better. Even if there are some perceived benefits from the regulations, those benefits are outweighed by the cost every time. The government exerting substantial control over a particular industry is just not good for anybody. It's not good for the economy. And far too often, we deal with problems with lobbyists buying politicians and then finding ways to craft favorable legislation, which basically ends up distorting the market and causing all kinds of issues, just like we discussed last episode. It gets irritating, and we'll talk about it when it comes to the Michigan State shooting as well, but it gets irritating when the knee-jerk reaction to something happening that people don't like is always more government. Stop doing that. It is a grievous error to make your automatic baseline response to increase government power to try to fix problems you don't like. Like Horowitz said, the primary focus now is on how to better regulate railroads, not on how to protect people's rights or give them recompense if their rights have been violated. We need new laws. We need new regulations. Come on, guys. Democrats, including Buttigieg, are blaming Trump for a law that was passed in like 2018 that removed a braking regulation. As if only we had that law. If only we had it, this would never have happened. And everyone would be happy. And there would be no other negative consequences. We just need more laws. Always just one more law, just one more law, and everything will be great. Give the government just a little bit more power, guys, and everything will be fine. Trust them. Listen, you want to know what will stop companies from taking shortcuts? The market. Financial losses, going out of business, the prospect of losing everything because you use cheaper brakes or whatever it may be than you should have, if that's the case. Instead, the government gets all wrapped up in this nonsense and protects these companies from market forces. The government's job is to be a referee, as Milton Friedman said, to enforce contracts and protect people's rights. And if Norfolk Southern violated people's rights, which it certainly seems like it did, then the government is responsible for making sure that they pay for it, and heavily, after due process, of course. Not regulating other railroad companies. But think about this. If you have two people running lemonade stands, and one of them poisons their lemonade and makes you sick, they have violated your rights and destroyed their business, because nobody's going to want to go to a lemonade stand that poisons its customers. So they have a strong incentive to refrain from poisoning the lemonade. You don't need to regulate the other lemonade stand and make them go through all kinds of testing procedures and use special ingredients to prevent them from poisoning the lemonade. All you've done is raise the cost of running a lemonade stand and made lemonade more expensive. Now someone else who wants to run a lemonade stand as a competitor and maybe has a very innovative idea for lemonade that they may not be able to do it now, because it costs too much to enter the market. Good job, government. Well done. That's a very simple example, but it makes the point. Regulations drive up costs and create a barrier to entry for new competitors, and forces existing companies who can't financially handle the regulatory costs out of the market. This inhibits competition, which is the lifeblood of a healthy market and the reason a free market works. And this can become especially problematic when we end up with regulatory capture and there's no real discernible difference between the lemonade stand and the government. They are, for all intents and purposes, the same. Look at Pfizer and the FDA, for example. And this is also one of the only real ways a monopoly can be created and sustained. The government, with legislation crafted by the company's own lobbyists, regulates competition out of existence and then protects the company from adverse market forces. It's not good. It's no wonder that these bigger companies support regulations. They know that they can take the hit while their smaller competitors can't. It forces out competition. But the bottom line is that the market regulates itself, and it doesn't need the government to do it. And when the government tries, it creates more problems. It is the government's job to enforce contracts and protect people's rights, meaning give them recourse when their rights have been violated. If that lemonade company poisons them, then fine. Government can come in and make it right, and the company will have to pay. But the market is infinitely better at regulating adverse behavior than the government is. It's the invisible hand from Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations. Companies that cut corners and put out inferior products or services, or worse, actually harm their customers, will be forced out of the market. So they have a strong incentive in a competitive market to avoid those things if they want to remain in business and make a profit. And the millions upon millions of individual interactions of people acting in their own self-interest in mutually beneficial transactions creates a far more complex and sophisticated and far more efficient system of resource allocation than any government could possibly dream up, let alone implement. A company that does not provide what the market demands will lose those resources because the market will decide that those resources will be much better allocated somewhere else. People who crave control don't want to hear that, though. It gives them anxiety. But it's the truth. The less control, the better. And I know, it's scary. It's scary to let go of that control. But trust me, the market knows what it's doing. I didn't really mean for this to turn into a conversation about the invisible hand and the government's role in the economy, but man, it is really important to talk about, though, because I see a lot of people blaming capitalism for this again, but you know, they blame capitalism for everything. So, you know, but it's not capitalism that's the problem. It's the government. No one should support increased government regulations, especially when we're already dealing with inflation and economic struggles. Stop. People don't think about these things. They don't think about the fact that it increases the cost of doing business, because now businesses have to worry about meeting those additional requirements that have been added, which in turn increases prices and hampers business operations, which hampers things like efficiency and innovation. And the government is the king of inefficiency and stagnation. So it's essentially making the market more like itself, which is not good for the economy. The business cannot operate as well as it would be able to otherwise. Is it an acceptable trade-off? Because that's what we're talking about, trade-offs. There are no actual solutions here. We only trade one thing for another and decide if that trade-off is acceptable. And it's easy to say, well, this will save lives, and let that be the end of the discussion. If it saves one life. We saw that with COVID. And look, and I don't want to seem calloused, because obviously life is precious and loss of life should not be taken lightly. But we can't just automatically justify sacrifices to liberty in the name of safety and saving lives. For example, you could force everyone to wear government-approved helmets all day, every day, and pay a helmet license fee to maintain a helmet license, which certifies that your helmet meets appropriate safety standards and whatever else you want. And maybe such measures would feasibly save lives and prevent traumatic brain injuries in some cases. But what is the cost of doing it? What is the cost in time and hassle and loss of freedom? Is the benefit worth it? Simply saying that it will save lives is not enough. The benefit has to outweigh the costs. And like I said, when the government interferes with the market, the cost pretty much always outweighs any perceived benefit. So I'm not sure what's happening in East Palestine. Hopefully the people who live there will get the answers they need and get proper compensation from Norfolk Southern if warranted. But I do know one thing for sure. The government is not to be trusted. Narrative number two. The shooting at Michigan State means we need gun control. Oh, here we go again. Something terrible happens and the immediate reaction is, we need government. Ah, government, do something. Always the go-to solution. Never mind that it never works. And that is especially true in this case, as this guy broke gun control laws all over the place. The laws were extremely ineffective. But before we get to that, I just want to say that what happened was awful and tragic, clearly. My heart goes out to the families and friends of the victims, and you know, praying for peace and comfort for them is just unimaginable. So this guy just randomly, it seems, shoots and kills three Michigan State students and wounds five others, then kills himself when confronted by the police. And the politicization was immediate. Calls for gun control spread all over the place as people found themselves yet again completely immersing themselves in emotional reasoning. Like Representative Ron G. Puri from Michigan, who issued a statement that he opened with, F your thoughts and prayers. F your thoughts and prayers. Except he used the actual term. Then he goes on to lament how horrible it is to live in America and then demands gun control. More legislation. Nice. And there were all kinds of similar responses from politicians in the media, the usual suspects, including President Biden, who also called for more gun control. Governor Whitmer and the Michigan legislature are itching to pass anti-gun legislation now that Democrats control both houses in the state. They are all beating the drum of gun control. Only problem here is the guy used handguns not rifles, which was supposed to be their focus. Remember? I guess not anymore. I guess we're focusing on handguns now. He was also arrested in 2019 on a felony gun charge, which prosecutors reduced to a misdemeanor for some reason. And under Michigan law, according to the Michigan AG, he should not have been able to even buy firearms. And cops were apparently called to his house before the attack. I mean, and you're not allowed to carry a firearm on campus at Michigan State. This dude did not follow the law at all. Everyone else did. And as a result, he, the criminal, was the only one with a firearm until the police showed up later. The law only impacted law-abiding citizens and subsequently made them vulnerable, as predicted. The criminal did not follow the law. And in fact, he used it to his advantage to attack people who were defenseless. But yeah, just one more law will do it. That's all we need, guys. Just one more law. But it gives insight into the political ideology, doesn't it? It was never about so-called scary assault rifles. If only we could get rid of assault rifles, everything would be great. No, it was never about that. It was about guns in general. They don't want people to have firearms, period. Their madness was always going to extend to gun ownership in general. They think that only the government should have guns because the government is extremely trustworthy, as we all know. And no matter how many laws they pass, it will never be enough because they'll never acknowledge that the laws they already have don't work. They'll continue to pass law after law after law, and the failures will continue to be attributed to lack of gun control legislation, no matter how many laws there are on the books. And this is a common trend for people who think the government can solve all their problems. When the government inevitably fails, the explanation is always, well, we just don't have enough government. There's no limiting principle at all. More and more government power and control indefinitely. It always makes me laugh, too, because, you know, these people are so anti-police. They're so against law enforcement. And yet they demand that we create more and more laws for police to enforce. And to top it all off, they want police to be the only people who have guns. Hey, what kind of sense does that make? As with most things, they don't actually mean what they say, right? It's not exactly true that they hate all police. Progressives don't actually hate law enforcement, even though they spew anti-police rhetoric on a regular basis. And we saw that with the anti-police rhetoric with what happened in Memphis with Tyre Nichols. But they don't actually hate police. They love federal law enforcement. They love the FBI, for example. They love the Capitol Police, apparently. They love law enforcement that they feel like they have control of. And not just physical control, but ideological control. If the average cops in the NYPD were ideological progressives, they would love them. They would be back the blue all day. Cops who hunt down people for using the wrong pronouns, they'd be all about it. They'd have a thin blue line flag on their porch. All of a sudden, police aren't slave catchers anymore. It's amazing. But they have to. Ideologically, they have to. I mean, a communist regime requires heavy law enforcement presence. It's a requirement. How could they possibly advocate for centralized power and massive government control without some form of force-bearing entity that coercively bends the knees of dissenters to state ideology? It's necessary. They have to have it. They don't like protect and serve law enforcement who uphold the Constitution. They like Gestapo law enforcement who uphold the ideology. But anyway, before I rabbit trail further off into Marxism, the gun control debate is just a bunch of nonsense. It's nonsense. The accusation that you don't really care about people getting shot or you don't care about children dying or whatever it may be in order to manipulate you into supporting gun control measures is foolishness. This is what Thomas Sowell calls the vision of the anointed, where the anointed in society believe that they are morally and intellectually superior and that they should be allowed to make all the decisions for everyone else because if only people were forced to adhere to their vision, everything would be better. It'd be utopia. Sure, history bears that out, right? Can't really think of any negative examples of people using the power of the government to force their utopian vision on others, right? Everything always turns out fine in those scenarios. And these people also believe that it's impossible to disagree with them without being a bad person. It's not simply that you disagree or that you have a different perspective. It's that you're an evil person who lacks compassion. It's a very myopic, narcissistic, narrow-minded way to view problems. Because, again, there are no actual solutions. There are only trade-offs. So there has to be a cost-benefit analysis to determine if the trade-offs are going to be worth it. In the case of guns, we have to decide if abandoning the Constitution and the Second Amendment is a tolerable trade-off for trying to reduce gun violence, with no actual guarantee, by the way, that gun violence would even actually decrease. In fact, there's every reason to believe that it would not, California being a prime example of that, unless you were somehow able to get rid of all guns, which is not even feasible. Which, by the way, California has some of the most restrictive gun laws in the country and yet leads the country in mass shootings. So what does that tell us? But this is the kind of analysis we have to do. What would be the cost of this policy? What would be some possible unintended consequences? Are there other measures that we could take and institute different trade-offs, like getting rid of gun-free zones and better fortifying schools to make them hard targets, for example? Do the benefits outweigh the costs? That's the primary question. And pretending like there are no costs is just disingenuous. And so, thinking about the Constitution, a right that is explicitly expressed in the Constitution that shall not be infringed upon by the government means that the cost of any measure that eliminates that right or even scales it back is astronomically high, and there is no real benefit that will reasonably exceed it. Unless the earth is about to explode and we have one single chance to save the world and the entirety of humanity, but only if we sacrifice the Constitution, then okay, maybe. But even still, I might just say humanity's had a good run. Give me liberty or give me death, in the famous words of Patrick Henry. But you see the point. Liberty cannot and should not be so easily sacrificed in the name of safety. It's a bad trade. You're not even guaranteed to get that safety that you seek, but you are guaranteed to lose your liberty. And good luck getting it back once it's gone. This would be my message to progressives and anti-gun advocates. People who support the Second Amendment do care about others, okay? They don't want innocent people to get shot. They don't want crazy nut jobs to have guns and go on shooting sprees at elementary schools or college campuses. Many of them are parents, and they love their kids just as much as you love yours. They don't want to see them in danger or to have a gun pointed at them. But what needs to be understood is that gun control is not the automatic, compassionate response. Many people recognize the extreme dangers of a disarmed populace and the extreme dangers of sacrificing liberty and giving the government too much power. These dangers far outweigh the dangers of your neighbor having a firearm when you think they shouldn't have one. These dangers have much broader implications and have the potential to substantially impact the lives of every single person in this country. Additionally, they recognize that offering such a profound sacrifice of their liberty and limits on government power would have little to no impact on the problem at hand, and would in fact create new ones, since only criminals would have firearms and people would not be able to defend themselves. Shall we purposefully sink the entire ship in an attempt to save the lives of the people on board? Some would say that you don't actually care about the people on board the ship unless you choose to rip it apart and sink it. Others, like myself, would say that sinking the ship is a terrible trade-off. It would not even solve the problem at all. It would only make things worse. I care very much about the people on board. And that's precisely why I refuse to allow you to sink the ship. Psychological concept of the week, the availability heuristic. So the availability heuristic is defined as a cognitive bias in which you make a decision based on an example, information, or recent experience that is readily available to you, even though it may not be the best example to inform your decision. So things that are easily recalled or readily brought to mind will cause you to believe that those things are more frequent or common or more probable. And oftentimes this results in erroneous reasoning because the cognitive bias causes you to think something is more frequent or common or probable than it actually is. For example, an experiment by Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky in the 70s found that when tasked with predicting whether there were more English words in a typical text that started with K or more words with K as the third letter, most people thought there were more words that started with the letter K, which was false. There were about twice as many words that have K as the third letter in a typical text. It's just much easier to think of words that start with K. So it's fairly easy to see how this bias can lead to erroneous conclusions in the real world. Many people have extremely distorted ideas about commonality of certain events, like police shootings, for example, simply because the media makes them seem far more common than they actually are. The Skeptic Research Center did a survey in 2021 examining how informed people were about race and policing. 84% of people who identified as very liberal believe police killed more than 100 unarmed black people in 2019. 84%. 53% believed it was more than 1,000. 22% believed the number was 10,000 or more. Are you kidding me? And for those who identified as liberal, 78% believed it was 100 or more. 39% believed it was 1,000 or more. And 12% believed it was 10,000 or more. The actual number in 2019 was 12. How is this possible? Most of these people believed the number was at least 100. And some believed it was 10,000. Well, 10,000 is just insane. That's 833 times higher than the reality. Now, part of this has to do with ideology, clearly, as we see the numbers rise the further left one goes. But much of it also has to do with availability heuristic and the media making these things seem a lot more common than they actually are. Even about half of conservatives believe that the numbers were 100 or more. When the media only reports on a certain kind of story with a certain angle and a particular agenda, people can be easily manipulated. Easily. If the media hardly ever reports when unarmed white people are killed by police, people will think that it never happens and that only black people are killed, even though more unarmed white people are killed every year. Or if the media rarely reports on when people use firearms in self-defense, then people might vastly underestimate how often guns are used to save lives and might be more easily swayed into gun control advocacy. This happens all the time. Like any cognitive bias, we just have to be aware of it and recognize that our assumptions about reality may not be correct. That's why it's important that we do our own research. And I think most of us have learned by now to not trust what the media and the government tell us is true. Otherwise, we'll end up believing that 10,000 black people are killed by police every year. Just outrageous. All right, so this week I wanted to just talk a little bit about one of my favorite music artists, NF. I don't listen to a lot of rap music anymore because I think 99.9% of it is just absolute trash. If you're a hip-hop fan, I'm sorry, but man, hip-hop is absolutely awful right now. awful, degenerate and awful. But NF, in my opinion, is one of the best artists around at the moment in any genre. And I love all of his previous albums, Mansion, Therapy Session, The Search, Perception, Clouds. And now he has a new album coming out called Hope, which it's been a couple years since he's released anything, so I'm excited. But he just released a song from the album with the same title, and I won't play the whole thing, but you'll hear some of it.
Hope. Yeah, I'm on my way, I'm coming. Don't lose faith in me. I know you've been waiting. I know you've been praying for my soul. Oh, oh. 30 years you've been dragging your feet, telling me I'm the reason we're stagnant. 30 years you've been claiming your honest and promising progress. Well, where is it at? I don't want you to feel like a failure. I know this hurts, but I gave you your chance to deliver. Now it's my turn. Don't get me wrong. Nature had a great ride, but it's time to give the people something different. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce my album. Hope. What's my definition of success? Listening to what your heart says. Standing up for what you know is right while everybody else is tucking their tail between their legs. What's my definition of success? Creating something no one else can. Being brave enough to dream big. Grinding when you're told to just quit. Giving more when you got nothing left. It's a person that'll take a chance on something they were told could never happen. It's a person that can see the bright side through the dark times when there ain't one. It's when someone who ain't never had nothing ain't afraid to walk away from more perfect, cause they'd rather do something that they really love and take the pay cut. It's a person that would never waver or change who they are just to try and gain some credibility so they can feel accepted by a stranger. It's a person that can take the failures in their life and turn them into motivation. It's believing in yourself when no one else does. It's amazing what a little bit of faith can do. If you don't even believe in you, why would you think or expect anybody else that's around you to? I done did things that I regret. I done said things I can't take back. Was a lost soul at a crossroad who had no hope, but I changed that. I spent years of my life holding on to things I never should have kept, full of hatred. Years of my life carrying a lot of baggage that I should have walked away from. Years of my life wishing I was someone different, looking for some validation. Years of my life trying to fill a void, pretending I was in. They get it.
And so good. So if you're not familiar with NF, this is a running theme of his, battling his inner demons. And the distorted voice is that inner demon of depression and anxiety and negative thoughts of being not being enough or whatever's trying to come out to the surface. And much of his music is about him dealing with these kind of issues and finding a way to overcome them, which a lot of people can relate to. And his music is clean, so that's a huge plus. But again, most of hip-hop is degenerate, profane garbage, so it is a bit of fresh air to have someone with such significant talent and skill who doesn't subscribe to all that, and who takes artistry seriously. Because this is art. This is art. It's not just music, it's art. It makes you feel something on a deeper level, which is what art is supposed to do. It's not just mindless entertainment, what NF does. It's like comparing a Rembrandt to some modern art piece, like a banana taped to a wall or something ridiculous. This is real art from a real artist, and I'm thankful that we still have people willing to be vulnerable and create things that actually matter. And I know I'm hyping up NF a lot, but this is also a direct condemnation of the music industry at large. I mean, there's so much trash out there these days. And it's crazy because I love music. I love music. And it's so difficult anymore to find new music that I love and want to listen to. For me, music is like a drug for me. I feel like I need it. But I find a song I really like and I need to listen to it all the time, right? But after a while, it starts fading and it doesn't have the same effect that it used to. I still like it, but it doesn't make me feel the same as I did before. So I start looking for new music to find that feeling again. And it's hard. It's hard to find good music. I listen to a lot of musical theater cast albums and it's the same. It doesn't really matter the genre, I guess, because it's just like there's no new good music, or it's few and far between. Like I love musical theater, but I hate most musicals. It makes no sense. Like Hadestown, I love Hamilton, I love Ragtime. I could listen to all day every day, but it's few and far between. The ones I love, I really love. But most of it, I can't stand. And it seems like that's true for all music now. It's like the music I love, but most music is just terrible. Does that make sense? I don't know. Maybe I'm just weird. Anyway, go check out the video for Hope on YouTube. The song is great, but the video really adds to the artistry. I'm excited for the album. If you have any music suggestions, email me at leonidas@leonidasjohnson.com. I'm always looking for new music. All right, guys, let me know if there are any topics you'd like me to tackle in a future podcast. I'm always open to suggestions. Just shoot me an email. Again, it's leonidas@leonidasjohnson.com. And make sure you pick up a copy of my new book, Raising Victims, The Pernicious Rise of Critical Race Theory, which is available now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Audible, anywhere you get books. I really appreciate you. Until next time, thanks for listening. I'm Leonidas, and this has been Informed Dissent. If you would like to support the show, you could do so through donorbox.org/Leonidas. That's donorbox.org/Leonidas. I really appreciate that. Make sure you follow me on social media at Leonidas Johnson and check out my website at leonidasjohnson.com. And I have a Substack now, which is just leonidas.substack.com. And as always, remember to do your own research, challenge everything, and don't be afraid to stand up for what you believe. We'll see you next time. God bless.